From our Chicago area studios, this is Behind the Destruction, your Demolition Derby podcast. And now for your hosts, Chris Neumer and Steve Gursky Jr. Welcome to Behind the Destruction.
This is episode number 3 of Behind the Destruction for the week of December 11th, 2011. I'm Chris Neumer. With me, over there on the chair that looks kind of broken, Steve Gursky Jr.
Howdy.
Our guest for today is the crusher for Mean Green Machine, Ryan.
The Wrecker.
Decker. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Heavy Metal Performance. What do you got for us, Steve?
Whether you want routine maintenance, repairs, or go all out and add a custom lift to your truck, HMP is up for the occasion. HMP, Rockdale, Illinois. Give them a call, 866-467-7971.
Or visit them online at heavymetalperformance.com. I think that went well. That was only take number 7.
Yeah, I started a little bit.
As I mentioned, our guest today is Ryan Decker from Mean Green Machine. And, you know, recently, I think it was sometime in October, on the Team Demo Facebook page, there was a poll posted by Sherry Heckenest about asking for votes for most outstanding driver of the year, and Ryan Decker got a number of votes on there. And I thought he was a fairly reasonable choice to consider. But it got me thinking about the origins of the MVP award, which I believe started in 2010, correct?
Yeah, I do believe. I think it was first race out 2010.
Yeah. And the idea was, of course, to honor individual driving performances in the team setting, which is sort of an anathema to some, but it seems reasonable given that this is a professional sport and this happens in every other professional sporting league. But it seemed like it got off to a really sort of unusual start in 2010, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I'm not sure who got the first one of the year, but If I do recall, it was definitely
Orange Crush.
It was in a losing effort.
They got to the finals, but they did lose in the finals. And I believe the same thing happened second night where, and now I will admit, I am fine with that. Like, I think, you know, when I think about MVPs, I think, yeah, you have to get to the last round. Like, if you get to the finals, I'm pretty much okay with anything you do. I might disagree a little bit, but
yep, I know Super Bowl MVPs have been on a losing team before. So I think it was a Pittsburgh team, and it may have been a linebacker. So, I mean, yes, if you make it to the final round,
you've got to be in consideration for the
award.
Then third night in 2010, this became not the case. When Charlie Sarge Turnbow got the MVP for a first-round performance where he lost. And I know that actually Sarge got the award for racing against you guys on Reckoning, and this is to take nothing away from his performance in that race, but my question in the end really goes to how much value can you have when your team loses in the first round?
Not much, because obviously, you know, I mean, you could break it down many ways, but you lost in the first round. How valuable was everyone, really?
Yeah. To me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then I think somebody from Orange Crush again, I think it might have been Ron Tarakowski, won fourth night's MVP. And as people were joking about it, they said, well, you know, at least it's not going to get, you know, at least we're not going to have another 0-for-1 MVP, somebody who lost in the first round, because that would be ridiculous.
Well, they were true.
They actually were correct. And the last, though, I don't know that he was actually awarded the award. It is commonly held the belief that Kyle Shearer won the MVP for fifth night of 2010 for managing to lose two races, not simply one, but two.
Yes, which was done by racing on one team and then filling in on another.
Yes.
Both who had lost their first round races.
It seems unusual to think that I think I figured it out, and I believe it was 9-7 or something like that, that the MVPs went 9-7 on the year, and I thought that just does not seem right.
I think what they did was maybe it was more of a popularity thing. I mean, granted, you know, maybe there was some good performances in there, but I think I might be wrong, but maybe the fans voted for it, or the director of photography, and Jason Twight maybe voted. You know, it's one of those things. It happened.
Yeah. Now going forward, they took the MVP awards away from the individual night's performances. This did not stop me from actually awarding a Most Outstanding Driver of the Night award in columns that I wrote, but there was no actual award and no presentation from the league. But there is going to be a Most Outstanding Driver of the Year that is going to be voted on. And, you know, without actually getting into specifics just yet, like, it seems to me that two qualities that you look for are somebody who is on a winning team.
Consistent.
It's somebody who was consistently on a winning team and who seemed to do something that was above and beyond the call of just normal racing or even good racing, because you're really saying who was the best driver of all 45 or 50 drivers this year. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, I could see it that way. You know, you take everyone out there, take the top teams, you know, because obviously if you're, you know, winning and consistent, you're a top team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I guess it's up to people voting on, you know, whether it's absolutely outstanding or if it's a consistency-based award, I guess you'd say the most valuable guy on the team, or was it the most flashy guy, I guess, on the team?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that is interesting about the team demo, what would that be, MOD, is that when you race in the round-robin setup that you have, it's that the good teams actually race significantly more than the bad teams. Like this year, the worst two teams, Seek and Destroy and Damage Inc., only raced 6 races on the season, whereas the best team, that's Reckoning, raced 14 times. And it seems to me that just by virtue of the fact that their drivers all raced 14 races, that to me seems like they're automatically all more valuable than drivers who didn't or who raced less than half that amount.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. I mean, it's simple. You know, what you look at is, let's say on Reckoning, everyone is the most valuable driver. You know, what you're saying is because, you know, they won because everyone was. And if you were a losing team and you have the most valuable driver on your team, you should have probably won more, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, if don't get me wrong, if somebody on Seek and Destroy or Damage Inc. managed to, like, flap their doors really hard and start flying around the track, I could ski giving them MVP. But until that happens, it's like, and you're in that lower half of the you're in the lower half of the standings, it's like, not so much.
Yep.
So, and you know, I started thinking about this when trying to choose my own most outstanding driver for the column that you can see on BehindTheDestruction.com, was just sort of thinking who these drivers were. And you know, I ran into this, I believe it was second night when Orange Crush won in 2011, where I wanted to give the award to Johnny Ryan or Ryan Bluer because their team won the night, but neither one of them raced all 3 races. It was Johnny raced, I believe, like first round and third round, or maybe only second and third round. I don't remember what the case was, but he raced well, but he only raced the 2 of the 3 races because they have their 6-man rotation. And to me, somebody who I think I gave it to Speedy Steve Volbrecht that night, that he raced in all 3 races, and it seemed like, again, to me, that had more value than the 2 of 3.
Yeah, I mean, now what happens if Johnny wouldn't have sat out a race and had an average or bad race? Would you still give it to him just because he was there and
yes.
He had 2 extraordinary races?
I know it might sound strange, but yes, I absolutely would.
Okay.
I felt bad, actually, not giving it to him because I was like, your performance earned it, but damn it, I set the standards the first night. I said, you got to race 3 races, or you got to get to the finals, and, you know, you got to race well and race all 3 races. And then he raced 2, and I felt bad because I thought he genuinely deserved it, but I just couldn't pull that trigger.
Yeah, I can see you were hurt. I can see it still in your eyes.
I was chagrined. But, yeah, and so it's like I look at the 6-man rotation and, you know, you take a look at Orange Crush this year and just talking about MVPs, and it's like, you know, your first thought is automatically Ryan Bluer. But then you think, you know, he had a couple races where he was knocked out early and he did run well when he ran, but it's like, you know, it's sort of hard to pull the trigger on that.
Right. I mean, he had some races where he was taken out and they lost because of it, but, you know. You know, I mean, I can be in the running for this MVP or MVD or whatever it is, but, you know, it's kind of funny how I look at it is, most valuable driver, in the races that Ryan Blaeger was in and people took him out and their team lost. Would I like to get this award? Sure, that's great. But what I look at is when people take Ryan Blaeger out, the team suffers and they lose. Even in a losing effort, you look at that, you have to say, that's the sign of a most valuable driver.
The Peyton Manning argument.
See?
So yeah. So what you're suggesting is that that with Blaeger's absence, it proved his true value.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Insert the 2011 Indianapolis Colts.
Yes.
Right there. Yes.
Yes, they were expected to be a playoff team, and now that their star quarterback has been injured, they are 0-4 how many ever games. And then I took a look at Full Throttle, and as I've mentioned before, I loved watching Full Throttle race. I thought they raced well as a team. I thought they had smart drivers. But here was the thing: is that it comes back to that. I think they all raced as a team. It wasn't like, I thought about the lineup, and I love watching Ronnie Johnston race, and I think he's a good crusher. He had some good races. And I think about the other guys too, like Jay Van Allen and Pete Millette.
All
and
quality drivers, but they're
very
all
quality.
Yeah, they're all plug and play and interchangeable.
I wouldn't say that. I would say they all needed to work off one another.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a team effort. Like I could only come up with two drivers actually for my most outstanding driver. I would have no problem with having the entire Full Throttle team be like third in the most outstanding driver category. I know it's sort of not living with the plural versus singularity of the thing of the award, but I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm. You'd have them third even though they finished second?
Tied for second, yes.
Tied for second.
Which brings me to
which was a three-way tie.
Yes. Which brings me to my number two choice for MVP of the year, which is Mean Green Machines' Ryan Decker, our guest today.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that just because he's our guest today, or is there?
Well, a little from column. No. But I thought when I watched, and again, this is from someone who doesn't quite understand all of the inner workings of the car setups and all that. But Decker seems to have an energy about him on the track. When he goes out there, he races hard, but it's not just that, but he seems to do very well. And I know, like, he will win races, he will crush, he will do pretty much whatever is necessary to help his team out. And I know that there is a slight taint to his name surrounding whatever it is that happened with his car's third night, but we'll be getting into that with him shortly. But to me, his performance and his driving on Mean Green's team throughout the year was one of the things that really truly helped propel them to their second place finish.
Yeah, it did. And the tough thing is, he can race well and they can lose. So obviously, they don't keep going throughout the rounds for the night. So he has less races there. So, you would have to assume that if he raced more, meaning if their team won more, he would keep doing the same things and doing well. And then I think, obviously, he probably would be a shoe-in for the most valuable driver.
Yeah.
I mean, if they made it to a third round more often and stuff. But now
it's hard to argue with them winning a night, though. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. And some of the races, like, the car, even though there was discussion about what he was doing with some of his cars prior to the race, which, as I said, we will get into shortly, his cars were approved by the officials, and he went out and raced with the cars that had been approved. And it's like he did a really solid job.
Right. That's a good opinion. You go for, Ryan Decker. Hey, that's great. I just think that, he's young. There's a lot more good things to come from him. He's young in the sport, with this being his rookie season and all.
Yes.
Ish. But no, I would have to respectfully disagree.
You don't even have to do it respectfully.
All right. Well, I just totally disagree. I think your opinion is crap.
All right. So, but for the most outstanding driver, I know you can't vote for yourself or won't, but I can and did. I gave you the most outstanding driver. And to me, there really wasn't even much question about it that, you know, your team won 12, the next closest team won 6, and you personally won 7 races on the season. I mean, you alone won more races than any other team. To me, that says most outstanding driver.
Well, thanks for pointing that out. I didn't even really notice that.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Can you explain your shirt that reads, "I won 7 this year, no one else won 6"?
My mom made that for me.
Okay. So, yeah. Well, there you have it. You know, Steve, I was thinking about our guests from last week, Michael Noble and Mel Noble Jr. from Stranglehold. And, you know, these are both young guys. Like, I know you wouldn't know it from looking at Michael, but he's actually older than his brother. Mel Noble Jr. is, of course, the legally blind demolition derby driver. And, you know, when we talked about having them on, you know, we stumbled on across an interesting topic that doesn't really extend across to many other fields or situations that remains somewhat unique, I'd say, to the team demolition derby, which is that their inexperience and their youth seems to actually be an advantage for them.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's kind of an ignorance, you know. Hey, how many head-ons have you taken at, you know, 45, 50 miles an hour? None yet.
No, so let's go.
Let's do it. Why? Well, because they never felt it. So, you know, and especially because they're young, too. I mean, when you're young, hey, you're crazy. Everything. Yeah. You know, no fear all the time, you know.
Yeah. But really, the not knowing how it's going to turn out thing, like there was a situation, I think I've told you about this, where I was doing a photo shoot in Los Angeles and ended up getting run over by a Lexus SUV. Mm. I mean, I turned out to be okay, but it was like, all right, that is the last time I rely on other people to stop traffic on Santa Monica Boulevard. Oh, my God. But yeah, so I'm not.
That's
doing
like a lesson learned, you know. I mean,
yeah. Well, I'm saying that's the thing is that right. They like the youth in the team demo, the TDA drivers who are very young, haven't had that sort of wake up and smell the coffee moment.
Right. You know, and I mean, if you get 4 young guys on a team, like, you know, Stranglehold will be coming out with. I mean, you know, granted they're going to have a lack of experience on the track, but maybe that'll be made up for with the, you know, hey, I've never taken a large, you know, a big time head on before, you know, a monster head on it. Yeah. 50 miles an hour. So here they go. You know, they go out against an Orange Crush team and you know, 50 miles an hour with Ryan Bleuer,
yeah,
and take him out. Well, you know, you might find out right then and there, are they going to be willing to do that again? Or, you know, is that it? You know,
yeah. Well, I'm guessing in the case of Mel Noble Jr., the answer is, yeah, he'll probably do it again. Because, you know, I'm going to tell him this, but you know that I love the crazy that is Mel Noble Jr. I don't think there's anything that man will not, or in the bad case, will do that would ever surprise me.
Crazy.
And
it is crazy.
The best possible way, I underscore that.
I think they're going to strap him to the hood because there's no rule.
No,
so this,
there is not.
This may be an advantage, which also could be cheating, but I heard they're going to strap him to the hood of the car.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Almost like their very own hood ornament.
Yes. There you go.
That there's no law. I'm curious to know if they have a guideline about racing with passengers.
Actually, I don't think there is one, so. There you go.
I don't know how that would come into play, but...
I know you can't. The driver can't leave the car, but it doesn't say the passenger can.
That's true. So, yes, this is my 600-pound friend. He's going to be sitting in the back seat. Yeah, don't worry about him. Yes.
Yes. He, a little extra weight, but, you know.
Yeah, he's working his way up in the sumo wrestling class. But, yeah, I mean, think about that, though. Like, with the inexperience, like, there's truly a benefit in this sport to being inexperienced. Like, think about, you know, you're having surgery. It's like, where's the youngest doctor I can find? Is anybody, actually you haven't gotten out of med school yet. You're doing the operation. It's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Are you mm-hmm. crazy? But in this, well, I mean, funny, we're talking about crazy, but it's like, here we are. And it's like, no, that actually could have a real benefit.
Yeah, it could. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, it's the no fear. It's the, you know, basically the balls out, go for it. Hey, we're young and dumb and, well, you know the rest of that, but
yep, ready to race.
Ready to race, yeah. You know, it's one of those things, but, I mean, as a driver and you look at that, you know, or as a retired driver,
yeah.
What you do is you look at is, you know, I mean, there's people that are probably listening to this and they're going, yeah, they're young, you know, but they once they get on the track, they're not going to know what to do. And, you know, maybe that's going to be, not maybe, but that'll be a huge disadvantage for them.
Mm-hmm. They won't know what to do.
Right. you know, and
ooh, but they also won't know what not to do.
Exactly.
Like, okay, so you're married, you have a kid. Did you find that your driving style changed at all, like, as you got married and as you had the kid?
You know what, it makes you think a little bit more. You know, it makes you it's not a doubt, but it's a little bit of a worry of injury. You know, I mean, you are running cars into each other at high rates of speed. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, strapped behind you is a tank, 5 gallons of racing fuel. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, at any time, you know, things can happen. You know, I mean, it's a matter of, hey, go out there, I'm going to do this, I'm going to race, and everything will be fine when you're on the track. But, you know, before the race, or like when you're building cars, you think about stuff like that. It's not a fear, but it's a worry, you know, because shit happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like you're just doing circle track racing, you know.
No, is hitting.
Yeah, I mean, it's people are trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're not really trying to put you in the ground, but they're trying to kill your car. I mean, yeah. Maybe some people are trying to kill you, but, you know.
Doubtful, but yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to be here talking with Ryan Decker.
This podcast is sponsored by Heavy Metal Performance, a family-owned and operated business located in Rockdale, Illinois. Much to the chagrin of their doctors, the guys at HMP live, eat, and breathe diesel. In the amount of time it takes you to listen to this episode of Behind the Destruction, HMP can add up to 124 horsepower to your truck. Nothing says Merry Christmas, honey, like more horsepower. For more information, call 866-467-7971 or visit HeavyMetalPerformance.com.
Welcome back. We're here with our guest, Ryan Decker. Ryan the Record Decker to some of you from Mean Green Machines. Is that plural?
Machine.
It's not? I've been writing it wrong all year long, then. Oh, it's like getting Kahuna's first name correctly. I can't do it. I mean, I know it's Garrett, and sometimes I throw an A in there or drop a T, and I still don't know. We were eager to have you on because you had one hell of a 2011 season. I was debating about whether we could call you a rookie because you did have a couple of races under your belt from 2010, but nonetheless, you burst down pretty strong.
I'll still take the rookie status since I raced last year. It wasn't with any of my equipment or anything like that. This first year is everything on my own stuff, my own motors, my own building. So I'll take the rookie status.
Yeah, but you do have a fair amount of experience in the demos, though, right?
Demos, I'm good at hitting stuff, but this whole team thing's a new experience. You know, normally I do free-for-alls. It's all, you know, I'm on my own, so I got to watch my own butt. You know, at least in team demo, you got three other guys watching you and taking care of you if you get in a jam.
Steve, did you ever run in any free-for-alls or county fair-style demos?
Yep, just one. And I won it. Just by luck. It was a raffle car.
Did you find it different than the team setting?
It's a lot smaller track, if you will, that you're on. But, you know, I was kind of in the same shoes as Ryan. You know, it was obviously it's a raffle car. It's not my engine. You know, everything's different. You get out there. Hey, what do you got to do? Hit people. I guess the only thing that's different is, you know, I won, but I only used the front end of the car. So a lot of people are kind of making fun of me. So,
Ryan, you found that to be true, too?
I think the big difference when you do the free-for-all demos or the team demo is body damage. You know, when you're sitting in that seat comfortable, you know, nailing people with that front end, it's a lot easier on the body. But then when you have to back up and aim all your shots, it's a lot harder because you get caught in positions. You won't see somebody come from the side. You know, you reach back trying to line up a shot, and you see somebody come from the driver's side, nail you. You'll catch you in some bad positions. I've always found it takes more of a toll on the body doing the free-for-alls than it is a team demo.
And I don't know about you, but I'm all about speed, and that's where the team demo comes in, yeah, where you get the speed and the shots on that. I mean, technically, you got to agree with the fairground guys that we do waste a lot of cars. I've actually sold quite a few used cars to fair guys. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, they can cut them up and replace what's all trash. So,
but actually, when I decided to step up in team demo, I was racing at Sycamore, my old man, and we were doing a demo. It came down to me and him, which was happened a few times here, and you know, I got the crowd got the best of me, and I went outside the track and was gaining speed, and you know, in my mind I didn't think I was going that fast, but everybody else told me they can hear it shift to about almost 3 gears when I hit them head on, and we hit so hard that both cars lifted off the ground, and I mean, I just, like, the bumpers were flush with the tires, and it was pretty insane. It was almost as good as if not as good as when Levi and Bad Company last year got that hit of the year. I mean, and I felt horrible. My old man wanted to beat the crap out of me, thinking, what the hell are you thinking? And that's when I'm like, well, obviously I'm not getting enough fix at this track, and I can't get enough speed without somebody yelling at me. So that's when I found this whole team demo thing where you can go as fast as you want and hit as hard as you want, and nobody's going to cry and whimper in the corner and say, he hit me too hard. You know, it's a nice feeling, so.
You know, Ryan, we talked about this before we started recording. You had an incident this year, third night, and I've heard a lot of people talking about it, and the stories are never the same. Well, you know how it goes. By the time, you know, the third person hears about it, it's so much different than the second person and so forth.
Well, yeah, I mean, with the railroad rail that you welded on your car.
And depleted uranium bumpers. So what happened when your car was singled out for cheating?
Well, first and foremost, I don't remove my bodies so that way people don't get the wrong idea. But I had welded the frame on the top seam basically from, I'd say, about a foot in front of the crush box and forward, because in the first race I had split my frames pretty bad. And, you know, you get all those rumors, okay, you know, Orange Crush does this, Reckoning does this, this is why they're so good. So in my mind, okay, let's just put a little extra weld in the seam. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm not trying to be a cheater. I don't want to be labeled a cheater. I'm out there to have a good time, you know, and just put on a show and try to compete with everybody. So in my mind, I'm like, you know, I got to compete better. You got these teams like, you know, Orange Crush, Reckoning, you know, they're just going out there. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with their driving. They're very impressive drivers, without a doubt. All the respect in the world. You know, so I'm like, let's, you know, go a little bit extra, thinking this will be fine. Well, obviously, I went too much extra, got called on it, was told I had to cut the welds out. So I did it.
Now, when you were doing the welding, did you think that it was, you know, cheating, or were you thinking it was like some kind of gray area that you could engineer?
I didn't think it would be that bad of a deal until actually it was done. And then I'm looking at it like, wow, this wasn't a good idea, you know. Yeah. But by that time, the damage was done, you know. But when you first do it, it's like you don't see it as that bad. But then all of a sudden, I'm sitting there, and I got the time to think. I'm looking at the cars done. I'm like, this, you know, and I didn't feel good about it. I didn't have a good feeling about it. I'm like, you know, but at that time, it's not like I can just, like, wipe it off and, you know, it's not some chalk rain. Just wipe it off and start fresh, you know. But I did go in there with a torch. I torched out a lot of the seams, did the best I could to get it off to try to keep everyone as happy as possible. Obviously, it wasn't good enough, but, you know, what do you do at that point? You look at all the rest of my cars that I raced all year. They held up just as good as well, and I did a lot less to them. So, you know, if you're going to ask me, doing what I do, you know, by welding the frames, did it give me, you know, make the cars run as good as them? No, I don't agree with that necessarily. The shots I took on people had a lot to do with it. You know, I had that sweet shot against Shear, which was just all about where I hit him. It wasn't like, you know, a head-on shot where that's why I didn't bend that much. It was just a perfect shot. And the one against Bryce was also another perfect shot. I caught him in the back end. You know, it wasn't where I didn't hit him in a really super strong part of the car. So it didn't do as much damage to my car. Did it give me a little bit of edge? Yes. But did it make or break the car? I don't think so.
And Steve, tell me what you think of this. It also seems like if the car got on the track, it wasn't cheated. You know, I'm a big proponent of the concept that, you know, like in basketball, it's not a foul if it's not called a foul. Or in baseball, it's not a strike if it's not called a strike. You know, so you're the head of officiating. You take a look at Ryan's car. You give it your approval. You slap the sticker on it. I mean, even if it had railroad tracks welded to the frames, you know, if it gets that official seal of approval, doesn't that mean it hasn't been cheated?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's kind of hard to say. I mean, technically, yes, it's cheated, but the head official just passed it, so.
That's what I'm saying. How does the expression go? It's not a crime unless you're caught?
I mean, it's not saying that, you know, he's human and, you know, he doesn't, you know, make mistakes or missed it. You know, stuff like that happens, yeah. But what it comes down to is the car was overbuilt. You know, it was engineered. Cheating, I get tired of hearing that. But it's, granted, okay, he misses it. You go out there and it's like that and someone catches it afterward, you know.
And then you got all that controversy. The only reason he won is because he was doing this to his frame.
You know, regardless of if the only thing you did was went and piled that car, you know, missed a shot and hit the wall and someone sees that you had this in there, you know. But, you know, I understand what you're saying, but to me, it's still cheated. I mean, but if the official didn't see it and no one else seen it, no one knows, you know, it was, hey, that car handled really well.
But in this case, and I'm not just making this argument because Ryan's sitting right here and physically imposing, but it was caught ahead of time. The official told him he had to deal with it. He did. He brought the car back. The issue had been resolved. The official gave it his approval. To me, that's a clean car.
I did the proper modifications necessary to come back out there because, same thing he says. You go out there with that car, no matter whether you win or not, you know, let's say I do a big hit, they're going to be like, the only reason you were able to do that is because, you know, they allowed that.
Did you feel your cars folded the same way all year long? After I found out about the seam welding, I was eyeballing your hits fourth night and thinking, his car seemed to be holding up really well.
Well, not only that, I mean, if you look at the fourth night cars, when you look at the one I ran against Bad Company, I couldn't even drive. I couldn't even steer that car. I had to cut the pit. I had to slice the pinman arm in half and roll it off the trailer because the frame had bent so bad that it bent the gearbox into the valley, and I lost complete steering on that last hit I did. I mean, it still ran, but if you notice, I just drove myself in the wall. I couldn't go anywhere. I had no steering. Yeah. You know, and same with the rest of the cars. Like, they look good, yeah, but they were still trash. You know, they did their jobs, and they were junk.
Yeah, I think there's, a lot of the stuff is, too, you also have to look at what teams face what teams, you know. You look at Orange. Let's use Orange Crush as an example. You're a good team, top team, you know. Won a couple championships, you know. I think they finished third this last year, tied for second
with us in Full Throttle.
You look at that. Okay, now you take Orange Crush and you have them go out against, say, Team 2 or Damage Inc. Now they go out there, they crush the hell out of everybody, drive all their cars off the track, and they look fine. I think people fail to realize sometimes, like, that guy just hit, Johnny just hit Matt in the, head on, and Matt's car just totally disintegrated. Johnny lost his header panel. Yeah, but we all know on some teams how cars are set up or how rusty some cars are. So, I mean, how do you know that, you hit a guy, let's say it's even on Team Reckoning.
Sure.
But they were short cars, and this car is a rusty turd, and you hit it and destroy it. People are going
to.
Yeah, they're going to build it to the best thing, but the car's just inferior. It's weak.
Sure.
People are going to instantly go, cheater. That car was cheating.
I think that's actually, I like the way you explain it. It's a perfect way to put it out there. And it's spot on because I know last year when I first started doing this, all the rumors about Reckoning cheating, all the rumors about Orange Crush cheating because, these guys go out there and they're annihilating teams and driving off the track and, you get them out there and they win a race and all four of the other cars are dead on the track and they drive all four cars off. And he's right. Sometimes it could be about the hits you do. Sometimes it could be, okay, well, this team probably just did the bare minimum. They probably got stock aluminum bumpers on the front. They haven't even done anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, Reckoning and Orange Crush are doing everything by the book, but they're doing everything they can.
So, my question would be, which I like to ask people this, you as a driver, what can the TDA do to make you feel better that everyone else is on the up and up? So you can just build your car right to the rule book and not worry about Reckoning or Orange Crush. Or even if someone pops up a rumor, you can be like, nope, that's not happening because the TDA wouldn't allow it.
Well, you could do like everyone else does. I know a lot of free-for-alls. If you want to accuse a guy of a cheater, they always tell you, okay, well, if you want to accuse a guy of a cheater, here's how it is. We're going to pop his hood. We're going to search through his car. But if you're wrong, you're paying him $50. Honestly, I think in the mindset of most people, it doesn't matter what the TDA does. It doesn't matter what other teams do. As long as they keep getting beat, they're always going to think the other team's cheating because there has to be some legitimate excuse on why they can't win rather than the fact that they're not building their cars right or they're just not that good of a driver. They don't want to think like that. They want something else.
We seem to do, Reckoning seemed to do really well against everyone except for Orange Crush, and the record shows it. And sometimes we just go out there and lay an egg, look horrible. But other times you go out there and you throw down, race a hard race, and be like, hey, we just gave them what we had, and we still lost, meaning they outdrove us. They were better that night, And yeah, I agree that some people right then would be, hey, well, they cheated. That's why we lost.
Now, you guys, Mean Green Machine, came out pretty strong at the end of the year. I was writing some year-end awards, and I gave the worst race of the year to Damage Inc. and Stranglehold. That race, man, that race set the sport back years, like back to where they were using horses instead of cars. I mean, But, you know, the thing that I found interesting was that the second one I thought of was when, you know, you guys on Mean Green Machine went out against Orange 3-on-4. You know, I was talking to Mean Green owner John Millett afterwards, and he told me that you guys didn't have a backup car that you could use because you didn't have any fuel cells or batteries that have gone into them. I was like, what? I couldn't believe it.
I don't agree with that. And actually, I was mad at John Clemens is because there was nothing wrong with his 80s cars. You know, the only thing that might have been a difference is maybe the fuel cells and batteries weren't strapped in, and that, you know, maybe the battery end, you know, the cable ends weren't tightened down. But that whole time he was tinkering with his 70s car, it sounded like utter crap to begin with, instead of investing all that time trying to get it to run, because he had it running at times. You know, it just ran, it just wouldn't stay running. And then eventually he burned out the starter. He could have jumped in one of those 80s cars. You know, and I told that to my other teammates. I'm like, instead of leaving us out high and dry, 3-on-4, you should have got out there in an 80s car and covered us. So, you know, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, Clemens is young. He's a hell of a driver. You've seen what he can do. You know, he just, you know, has to put a little extra effort into it, and I think he could be a hell of a driver.
All right, Ryan, it is time for your 5 questions. You ready? Good. You recently celebrated a birthday. Name one famous person who shares your birthday.
I got nothing.
Wow. We seriously need some Jeopardy music here or something. Well, it turns out there are a lot. Just actors, Danny DeVito, Rachel McAdams, RuPaul, Dylan Walsh, Rock Hudson, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. All right, question number 2. True or false? Your teammates call you Babe.
This is true.
This is true.
John has a way of with his words. Which makes other people question him, but...
All right. Question number 3. What does the number in a bra size refer to?
The number in bra size? Isn't that the width around them?
That is correct.
My girlfriend works for Victoria's Secret.
Question 4. What is a sexier accent, a British accent or a Southern accent?
Southern.
Huh? 3 of 4. Good for you. Last question for you. Name 3 different shades of green.
Yeah, dark green.
It's
dark. It's darker than regular green. light green. I don't know. That's a tough one.
We would have also accepted neon green or forest green, army green, or camouflage green. I think I would have even accepted sky green. Ryan Decker, thank you for stopping by. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brad.
For Chris Neumer and Steve Gersky Jr., go Gersky or go home. I'm John Sunzimer. We hope you enjoyed our podcast, and thank you for listening. For past episodes of Behind the Destruction and the latest Demolition Derby columns and interviews, please visit BehindTheDestruction.com. You can follow us on our Facebook page or follow Chris Neumer on Twitter at CNeumer. CNEUMER.